Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the after show. I am your co-host this evening, Kelly Gamont. With me tonight is Mike Rose.
Good evening, Kelly.
And let's get to it. Last week, we started with a little bit of sad news we should probably mention again this week, which is the earthquake in Nepal. Conditions there are basically no better. They continue to have aftershocks, and there are still many remote areas of Nepal where help has yet to arrive, and it's been more than a week. So if you have the opportunity, you can donate through the iTunes store. You can donate to your local organization. I just sort of presume that in this case, Portland is a lot like other places where there are people who are getting on planes and going and taking suitcases full of water filters and truckloads of antibiotics and all kinds of other things so that they can go get help to where help is needed. So if you have a local place like that, awesome. If you don't, you can always donate to the Red Cross, like I said, through iTunes or anything else, really. Whatever you can take a moment and do, it would be awesome.
And continuing in the bad news, good news department, it was a rough week in Baltimore, and we do send our thoughts out to everybody there who is affected both by the death in police custody and also the subsequent unrest and protests. And now there were indictments of the police officers who were involved in Freddie's death. So hopefully the family will get a measure of justice there. But if you think you might have accidentally tuned into the social issues podcast that we do on the side, also called the after show, just to keep things confusing. There's equally bad news in the tech world this week. So
there is.
Yeah, a tragic loss. The CEO of SurveyMonkey, Dave Goldberg, who is also possibly, I wouldn't say better known, but possibly also known as the husband of Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg, the author
of
Leaning In fame, the author of Lean In. He died unexpectedly. It is not clear what the cause of his death was, but he passed away very, very suddenly on Friday. Mm-hmm. And he leaves behind, of course, his wife and also, I believe, two daughters, young daughters. They were married in 2004, so both his kids are quite young. Mm-hmm. And just tragic. I did not know Dave, but I do know people who have worked with him. A friend of mine actually just started at SurveyMonkey within the past 3 weeks. And just by all accounts, a mensch, a really wonderful guy who had a great reputation within the industry and had also made it part of his personal mission to improve the lot of women in the tech industry and to make sure that people were standing up for themselves and fighting for the compensation and the credit and the roles that they deserved. We send our condolences to his family, to the SurveyMonkey family, the Facebook family, and just a rough week and a bad loss for those folks. So Dave Goldberg, the CEO of SurveyMonkey, dead at 47. And so,
let me just point out that we've sort of ended that section now. And
yeah,
we've moved other things.
We're going to move on. You can let go of the razor blade, everybody, and step away from the ledge. We're done. There is a piece of tech news or quasi tech industry news that we're not really going to touch on this week, basically because even if I did know something about it, which I don't, I wouldn't be able to discuss it, so I won't. But you know, if you're the sort of person who is interested in tech merger conversations, of course you can follow all the
speculation.
You know how we talk about Mac technology rumors and Apple technology rumors and the iPhone 8 and the iPad Pro and everything that's hypothetical until it's real. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's kind of fun when it's not the thing that you're up to your eyeballs in all the time.
It's awesome when it's about other people.
Like, hey,
I'm
a spectator now.
It's
woo!
That line from Neil Simon's Brighton Beach memoirs. Everyone was so tense. I loved it. I love it when they're tense, especially when they're not me. They're tense about.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about that, but there's plenty of other stuff to talk about.
Yes.
So what was happening? People got their watches this past week.
Yeah. Well, and So because we record on Sunday, we hadn't really talked to a lot of people who got them on Friday.
Right.
So a lot more people have them now because people who had ship dates in May, I think, I want to say Jeff Gamet was set for mid to late May. It was like much later than earlier in May.
Mm-hmm.
And his came Friday, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah. So if you, like, I have to say this, if you aren't obsessing, the two of you who aren't obsessing over your Apple Watch ship dates, you should go look because maybe they've gotten sooner. Part of the reason for that is I think there was a manufacturing kink that had been worked out because, you know, as we recall a few weeks back, when the pre-orders went up, that like instantly it was like, the orders went, the site went live at midnight, and by 12:10, people were getting ship dates in June.
Yeah.
So, as of Friday, I don't remember which model it is, but there's a ship date in July. Estimated ship date of July on,
I think that's
on,
the larger model.
Yeah. On something. I don't remember what it was. I know that Jeff wrote it up over at Mac Observer because he happened to notice that his had changed, and so he went to see what the other ones would be. And so the thing about it that is interesting to me is that there was a point when, I think probably over on the Daily Observation podcast at Mac Observer, I said, there's probably, the reason for the supply constraint is probably a thing that we just don't know about. Like, there's a missing piece to this story that people are having to wait till July to get their watch.
Mm-hmm.
If they ordered it like 12:30, you know, half an hour after they went live and they had a ship date in July, like, there's probably a reason for that. You want to go into it?
So the reason apparently is that the Taptic engine, which is the little buzzy bit, this is a technical term, the little buzzy bit of the watch, the tapper, the buzzer, the thwonker, the magic thwonker, was being manufactured again, according to a Wall Street Journal report, that it was being manufactured. So good with the talking, by two different companies, two different companies, one in China and one in Japan. And it turned out that, again, according to the WSJ, the ones that were coming from the Chinese manufacturer were discovered to be defective after, in fact, apparently they had already been assembled into some watches. So that's problematic. So Apple had two suppliers for this part. One wasn't working out. They were able to ship the watches that were made with the other part. And they have presumably fixed the supply issue at this point. And Apple does, you know, logistically speaking and from a supply chain perspective, it does multi-source a lot of components.
Oh, yeah. Hard drives or RAM. You have to do anything on the scale that Apple does it.
Right.
You have to be getting that from more than one place. Even if it's the same company that has multiple factories, you still are getting those parts from more than one plant at a time.
Right.
No question.
But when you have new, like the Apple Watch is essentially largely novel parts. I mean, they have not been used, although the...
Bespoke.
They're custom, or if they're not custom, they're new. So there's going to be ramp time. There's going to be manufacturing issues. I think a couple people pointed out that this is not the first time in recent history that Apple's vaunted supply chain mastery has fallen upon its anthropomorphic face, anthropomorphized face, with the GT Technologies Sapphire screen acquisition
situation.
I believe debacle's not too strong a word for that.
It is not.
So that they're two completely different situations very different outcomes. Obviously, there are plenty of Apple Watches shipping, but that may have been what was slowing things down at the beginning, and that may be what is causing things to pick up now because whatever component, whether it was the Taptic engine or something else, whatever component was creating the pinch point may now have been cleared.
Right, and so some people, their ship dates have actually gotten sooner. So there are people, that's why I said go check them, because for some folks, it's gotten shorter than what it was initially when you placed the order and, you know, and on the 24th, when it seemed like everyone you knew was getting their watch and you didn't have one, and it still said July or whatever, it may not be that anymore. So you should definitely make sure that you look. So I thought that was interesting because I know that that was something that John Gruber had mentioned in his review, was that that the Taptic was kind of flaky and then it kind of quit. And so he ended up getting a replacement unit. Mm-hmm. So that he may have had one of those with the other piece in it. The thing that I think will probably help this, Mr. Kelly works for a company that does manufacturing, and he's mm-hmm. a financial person. So I hear about manufacturing and how you account for stuff sometimes. And so I've asked him a lot of goofy questions about things because I'm trying to understand the thing that he is sometimes complaining to me about. So remanufacturing something. So for example, if they were to take the watches that have the flaky haptic magic swankers in them and replace those, that's a very different process than building them from zero. So remanufacturing something isn't necessarily the same process. And right now, that's just not an eventuality that they had probably planned for, you know, on this kind of scale. So for now, those are probably sitting to the side. And at some point when they find the logistical know-how to make this happen, they'll be able to do it.
Yeah.
So
they will. They may not
be able to sort it out.
They will. They hopefully will be able to sort it out. They may not be able to fix the problem with people's tattoos interfering with the heart sensor, or with right. with the are you wearing it sensor. But you
now,
know,
I have heard from a couple of sources. I say that like they're, you know, it was a secret meeting in the nighttime, and that's totally not the case. But in more than one place, I have read that it is maybe something to do with the pigment of the skin. And that for some people, it is artificially pigmented. And for some naturally pigmented people, darker, it may also be giving them trouble.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
But hopefully.
So we heard all about tattoos, like if you have a big black tattoo there. But also, if you are a person who is not white, then this may also be something that is affecting some folks. So.
You should try out an Apple Watch in the Apple Store and see if it can read your particular biometrics. Mm-hmm. Always good to know. But we're going to talk probably more about the Apple Watch as we get through the rest of our topic list here. But there's a few other things that have happened.
Yes.
Not all of them technical. There is a I almost don't even know what to start with here, but let's move from the
coach?
No, from the from the sublime to the slightly ridiculous. So in the waning, apparently shrinking tablet market, as the iPad remains dominant, but of a smaller fiefdom.
But it's over.
Tablet winter is coming. the wall is up. Microsoft's, you know, God love them. They will keep doing something till they get it right. Virtual reality, they've got HoloLens, cloud, they've got Office 365 and Azure, and now tablets, hardware. So the Surface 3 and the Surface Pro 3 are coming out, I guess, this week or in the 5th, I think, coming out. By the way, tomorrow, happy Star Wars Day, everybody.
Happy Star Wars Day, you guys. And now let's explain this to people. So you set it up and I'll knock it down.
Okay.
So what is the date tomorrow, Mike?
I believe it's the 4th.
Okay. And I'm going to need you to set it up so I can finish.
So
what's the date tomorrow, Mike?
It's May the 4th.
Be with you.
Well, I was trying to stretch it out a little bit more, but sure, fine, whatever. Yes, May the fourth be with you as well. Twitter's got like custom emoji apparently for May 4th.
And also, they had the custom Star Wars emoji because of the new trailer for the new movie, which is very exciting because it looks awesome. And it's not like I changed my actual picture of Space Shuttle tiles to something from that I took as a still frame from the movie, from the trailer. It looks really amazing, and I kind of can't talk about it because I get incoherent really quickly. but it looks, I know we live in a post Phantom Menace trailer world, and I still can't help but be excited about it all over again. There's that bit at the end, and every time I get a little dust in my eye. It's very odd. And it's really amazing. So anyway, happy Star Wars Day tomorrow, which is very, very exciting because right now the promise of an entire new trilogy of films is ahead of us. And that's terribly, terribly exciting. And in fact, it is so exciting. I have never uttered this sentence before, and yet it happened. I walked by the window and the shoes were on sale and I had to have them. I'm now the proud owner of not one, but two pairs of limited edition Star Wars Vans.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I know. And I seriously, in all my life, and I'm still not prepared to admit to people how many years that is, I have never uttered that sentence until this moment. I saw them. I saw those shoes in the window and they were on sale and I had to have them. That has not ever happened to me before. So I own the black Darth Vader slip-ons. And I own the New Hope slip-ons, which have the Vader helmet on the one side and then sort of the poster shot on the other. I am terribly excited about all of these. I'm going to wear them tomorrow, even though I work from home and nobody will notice them. Maybe I will make a special trip to Starbucks just so I can show off my Star Wars shoes. It's really exciting because they always make shoes like that for little kids, and I've had giant feet for so much of my life that I never got to wear any of the fun ones. So I was very excited that these actually came in a size for me.
It's just this, the marketing engine is just, I mean, the cover of Vanity Fair right now is Chewbacca and
wearing an Apple Watch.
No, that would be awesome. Can it see through Wookiee hair?
Now there's a sensor that's worth talking about.
That would be an incredible sensor.
It would.
But now it is Star Wars Day tomorrow. Twitter has three custom emoji that you can get by just hashtagging C-3PO, Stormtrooper, or BB-8.
BB-8, which is the new little ball marbly.
The ball droid. The practical effect.
I know.
That's insane. Awesome?
They had the real deal at Star Wars Celebration. It is so cool.
I just can't quite get over that.
It's a big year for Kelly, I have to say. Because Avengers is out now with
yes,
Ultron.
That's true.
And Ultron was a huge deal in the comics when I was a kid. So I've read a truckload of Ultron comics. I'm super, 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 super pumped about it. And it's James Spader, who stars in one of my favorite movies from high school, Pretty in Pink. And later this year, in November, we get the new James Bond film, which is terribly exciting to me and also really entertaining because Samsung was trying to get some product. Or no. Yeah, Samsung was trying to get marketing placement in the movie. It was Sony. Sony was trying to get marketing placement in the movie, in the James Bond movie. And Daniel Craig and director Sam Mendes said, no, we're not going to use your phone because James Bond would have the best. And so, no, which I thought was hilarious. And then after James Bond, once I have suitably recovered from that, then we get Star Wars.
You just, it's just like it's a roller coaster of awesome coming at you.
I know.
Like a freight train.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. I don't have to put up with another 27 ending Hobbit movie this year.
Wait. Which ending is this? Number 15 or number 18? Oh my gosh. Speaking of geek culture and things that nobody saw coming. I was browsing Spotify earlier this evening, as I do sometimes of a Sunday evening. And you get down the Spotify rat hole. You know how that can go.
Oh, man.
You know how that goes.
I do.
You just get a little lost. And I was three clicks to the wind. I had been listening.
Show title.
I'd been listening to Three Clicks to the Wind. Dot it. Marked it. I had been listening to a song by a song called Pompeii by whatchamacallit?
Bastille?
It is by Bastille. And I had promptly bought it in iTunes and I'd sent it to my daughter. But I had heard it because it was in iTunes radio. So, of course, I couldn't go back to it. So I went flip to Spotify, listen to that song. And in searching for it, I discovered through a couple of cul-de-sacs that my and probably everybody's favorite chamber music cover factory, the Vitamin String Quartet, had covered that song, had done a tribute version of Pompeii in their Best Songs of 2015 Volume 1 album, which is just out. So great. That was like my little Spotify notification. 20 best songs 2015. So that's the top release on the Vitamin String Quartet list in Spotify. But the one right below it, which is also a very recent release, album title, The Geek Wedding Collection.
Oh, that's a thing?
It is a thing. It is string quartet versions of the Lord of the Rings theme. They Might Be Giants, Birdhouse in Your Soul. In your soul. Birdhouse in Your... I'm not Thor. I'm perfectly fine. Birdhouse in Your Soul, string quartet version. The Game of Thrones main title. Jonathan Colton Still Alive from the video game Portal.
From Portal.
The Imperial March, done in the string quartet, which is odd because it's kind of an instrumental to begin with. Edward Scissorhands, Harry Potter, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Man.
And The Princess Bride, Storybook Love as a string quartet. So they have a whole album.
That's awesome.
For the people who use the Star Wars medal ceremony music from A New Hope at the end. They
you mean
use that
like
for
Kelly.
Yes. For their recessional? Yes. Those people, like you.
Yes, because that's exactly what we did.
You are now the second person I know who's done that. So there's
well,
a whole album
I told
album
my
of
mom,
it.
Here's the story of it. I told my mom, this is what I want the music from the end of Star Wars, and she said, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I waited until she kind of chilled out, and then a while later I played her like the first 30 seconds over the phone, and she was like, oh, that sounds nice. That'll be good for a recessional meeting. I'm like, I just really don't want it. Like, I just don't care. So I want something that I like, and I like this. So what do you think? And she said it was fine. And so then we're in line, you know, everybody's got to hug me to eat, and we've been at it for a couple of minutes, and then, you know, you get the big dun, 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 dun. She looks at me and I'm like, you said okay. It's not my fault. You didn't listen to the whole thing. That's called due diligence, woman. This is so... So while you're queuing up, what I'm going to do is piggyback onto this, something that I was on Brett Terpster's podcast not too long ago, Systematic, and I had a great time talking to him. And one of the things that I picked on the show was Geek Remixed, and you can get this at geekremixed.com. It's something that Bobby Roberts, who's a guy here in town who used to be on the radio and such, he puts those together. They are amazing, and the thing that I love about them is that basically only one of them has any vocals, which is why I'm really excited about this Vitamin String Quartet record, because I like stuff that doesn't have vocals with it in order to play in the background while I'm working. So every streaming service I have a login for, I have a movie soundtrack channel for. And there's a reason, and that's the reason is because I like the stuff that I like, but doesn't have any vocals. So it is really awesome to me that this is a thing now, and I'm really excited. So let's.
I was actually playing it while you were talking. So okay. We'll put it in post. I don't know if that's going to work or not, but we'll try.
We'll give it a shot.
We'll put a little clip. So here, everybody, is a little clip of "Still Alive" done by the Vitamin String Quartet. Awesome. Wasn't that awesome?
That was so great.
So yes, that was my brief moment this afternoon. But we were talking about The Surface. It's funny how we get off track.
No, it's not. I'm really good at that.
So we're talking about The Surface, yes.
So yeah, The Surface. It too will play music for you from the Vitamin String Quartet.
Among other things.
Yeah. But so, there was a big thing this last week called Build, which is sort of Microsoft's WWDC, if I'm not entirely mistaken.
Basically correct, yes.
And they announced a number of things. One of them was the HoloLens demo that we talked about briefly. Mm-hmm. And they also had this new Surface 3 situation, which we're hearing about.
Yeah, the new Surface 3. So there's a Surface 3 and the Surface Pro 3. The Surface Pro 3, if I am unmistaken, is the one that will... it's the processing power of a full Windows laptop. So this is the Atom... Let's see, which processor is this? This is using the... the Surface 3, excuse me, uses the Atom X7. The Surface Pro uses an Intel core. So this is going to be a more powerful processor, more storage, more RAM, either a Core i3, Core i5, or Core i7. It's also going to be heavier and going to be a little bit more... it's a Retina screen. So it is a 12-inch ClearType Full HD Plus. Guys, come on. Get it together. 2160 by 1440, so it's a Retina screen.
So Retina I will point screen. Out the Surface 3, I guess the mere mortal Surface 3, with the Atom X7 processor is 10.8 inches of screen size.
Yes.
And the Surface Pro is a full 12 inches.
Yes, it is. So, and it's higher res, and it's you can say 9 hours of battery life. They don't give a battery life spec for the conventional Surface 3, at least not one that I see.
No, up I found to 10 a hours, 10
hours,
page, so,
yeah. 9 hours or 10 hours. So yeah, so they're both Windows 8.1 Pro, presumably upgradable this year to Windows 10, and they look nice. People who have surfaces, pretty much everyone has an actual Surface, like an outer Surface. People who own Microsoft Surfaces seem very, very happy with them, and they're exciting. Yeah. They're exciting devices. But what I found interesting was the comparison chart on the main Surface page at Microsoft, which you can find by going to Microsoft and looking at Surface, where they compare the Surface 3 to what would be its natural enemy in the wild, its natural predator, which is the iPad Air 2, the aforementioned slacker champion of the tablet market.
The totally over
tablet market.
Tablet, yes.
So they have a lovely comparison chart where they say, "What is it a laptop? Is it a tablet? Does it come with a keyboard?" And of course, the iPad Air does not come with a keyboard. Right. It just comes with a lightning port and third-party keyboards that require pairing and charging. Boo.
Oh.
Then there are apps and programs. The Surface runs millions of Windows desktop programs, which would be weird on tablet, and touch apps from the Windows Store, and you can run them side by side. The iPad Air only runs apps from the App Store, and only one at a time. Mm-hmm. And then we get to a comparison column. Familiar desktop office. The Surface 3 includes 1 year, footnote, of Office 365 Personal, with support for touch, mouse, keyboard, and pen input. The iPad Air 2 runs Word, Excel, and PowerPoint with fewer features and no pen support. And whose fault is that? Fewer features. Really? It's almost as if they didn't actually make the software.
I know.
And by the way, you know what they don't mention? Here's what they don't mention. What they don't mention is everyone who bought the original Surface... And the Surface 2, by the Surface 2 they had started out. But certainly everybody who bought the original Microsoft Surface, there was no touch-enabled version of Word, PowerPoint, or Excel for that device.
At all.
It didn't exist.
Right. And then, so I went scrolling down this page I found of specs. So there's four models here, because there's the Surface 3 with the Atom X7, and then there's the Surface Pro 3 in i3, i5, and i7 flavors. So the most expensive iPad, I think, is A29. Is that still a case?
That's probably right. We can check.
We're going to say it's A29. You can, and I know one of the things that Microsoft likes to hit on the Apple side is price. So the Surface 3, which, by the way, has a lot less stuff than the Surface Pro, aside from that 1.2 inches of screen, says starting at $499, which means, of course, there's you know, it can go up from there. The i3 is $799. The i5 is $999. And the i7 is $1,549.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, it's a laptop. I mean, it's a laptop. Let's not mince words.
Right, but they're trying to talk about how, it's a tablet, and if you're going to position yourself as an iPad competitor, how are you going to charge me $1,500?
Yeah, and also, by the way, the $499 one does not have a Retina screen. So if you apples to apples, if you want 128 gig with LTE, Surface 3, it is, what is going on with this pre-order page? No, thank you. Good Lord. So yes, this is an email with me when available. So it's not released yet.
It's supposed to drop this week, I think, was what they were saying.
It is dropping, but those are the Wi-Fi models. So the Wi-Fi models you can pre-order. And the LTE models, because as we know from experience, those take longer to approve. But the high storage 4 gig RAM Wi-Fi model will set you back $600. So it is, the Surface 3 is price competitive with the iPad. The Surface 3 Pro is not.
If I get an iPad Air 2... Mm-hmm. In 64 gig and mm-hmm. Wi-Fi, mm-hmm. that's $599.
Yes, that is half the storage of the Surface 3 that you are getting for the same price.
So let me make it $128. Mm-hmm. And at $128, I am at $699.
Yes, and but here's the thing. The magical thing about the Surface having that typewriter, that keyboard cover, that's mm-hmm. another $130.
Yes.
Yikes. So, you know, not so much coming with it. And the pen, if you buy a pen, is $50. What? Yeah. Wow.
So now you're into it, $180 for the keyboard and the pen.
Which just got rid of your iPad advantage.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't realize the cover was that expensive. I thought it was less expensive. It's a very nice keyboard. I mean, do not get me wrong.
Right.
But
you're paying for it. I have no problem with paying for it, but don't, you know, if you pull my other leg, it plays Jingle Bells, you know.
Now, see, if I were shopping for a laptop, if I were shopping for a Windows laptop, which I don't plan to be anytime soon, but I would seriously consider the Surface Pro.
So would I.
Because it's a nice, you know, it's a nice piece of kit.
Yeah.
And pretty snazzy. Now, I did this week get my first chance to have hands on with the new MacBook, which try this experiment. If you have an Apple Store near you, go in with your iPad Air or Air 2 and put it on top of this MacBook when it's closed.
Oh man.
And just the convergence is coming, people. It's out there. I mean, you can look at the Surface Pro and think, well, the Surface and the Surface Pro are really blurring the difference between what is essentially a tablet device in the Surface and what is essentially a convertible laptop style device in the Surface Pro.
Yeah.
But the new MacBook is perilously close in terms of heft to an iPad. It is a teeny little thing.
Well, I have recently upgraded to the 13-inch Retina MacBook, MacBook Pro, not the new MacBook.
Yeah,
because I know I've said it, but I just don't remember where. I am terrified of MagSafe going away, so I did not want the new thing. So I don't have it, and I'm very happy about it. I got the Force Touch trackpad, and man alive, ages ago when Apple laptops were called PowerBooks and Henry Rollins was in the advertising, he's the guy on Son of Anarchy, kids, look him up. the way the keyboard and trackpad were laid out similarly, except there used to be a separate button and the button was at the very, very bottom, the furthest away from the keyboard. So what I learned to do, because I have teeny hands, is to sort of gyrate a certain way, and I would use the trackpad at that point it was a trackball. I would use the trackball with one thumb and then I would use the other one to click. And so I got used to everything being down there. And then once it all went zen, you know, the trackpad is the button. It was still at the bottom. You couldn't click effectively unless you were clicking. If you needed actual clicking, you couldn't really click effectively at the top. The amount of force it took to press at the top and get a click was just ludicrous. So you ended up having to press down more towards the bottom. So I was still using that same sort of maneuver. So I spent some time learning about the Force Touch. I listened to people talk about having tried it. And when I finally pulled the trigger and went with the Retina machine, which by the way now makes Mr. Kelly a Mac user. And it only took me 19 years.
Wow, impressive. Most impressive.
Yeah, so the next time I think about not having patience for anything, I'm going to remember he's a Mac user now, and it only took me 19 years. So, but now, like, I can press anywhere on that trackpad. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a really, really tiny, like an insignificant, like, why does that even matter? And you think that until you use one for a while. And then once you get used to it, like, he's had some questions about setting something up or configuring something, or I'm trying to get it to do this and I don't know where that preference is. And I've gone over to try and drive on what was my machine until like 3 weeks ago. And it is hard because I accustomed to it on this new machine so quickly.
Mm.
So the thing that I most want to get my hands on with the new MacBook is that new keyboard with the new switches.
I did a little typing with it. You know, it's
I have
hard.
A long-standing hatred of the current chip situation.
I can't really tell from the time that I spent with it whether I would like it for long-term typing. It does feel a little cramped. And now, of course, I'm dealing with, you know, even though I don't have an Apple Watch, my existing watch, if I'm typing on my laptop, the buckle digs into my wrist when I type on a laptop keyboard. But I would say this is another one where you've got to get some time with it. But given the sheer tininess of the thing, the keyboard actually feels pretty good. It doesn't feel like a netbook keyboard, which were abominations unto nature.
Oh, they
and
were
God.
Horrible. But it's got the new switches, and I find that
It's got the new scissor switches, or instead of cantilever or seesaw or whatever they were, you know, teeter totter.
Instead of the shenanigans under those keys now. That's really what it comes to.
The shenanigans under the keys is the second option for a show title.
I have a long standing dislike of those, and I think it's because I was spoiled and that, like, the first keyboard I ever really typed on was an Apple Extended 2 keyboard. And that was the first keyboard I ever spent significant time with.
Yeah, that'll wreck you.
And so, yeah, I'm, like, kind of snobby about keyboards now. So I have a Matias on my desk because it's got the one I have has slightly different switches because I've got the quiet keyboard on my desk because sometimes there's someone else in my office and I'm trying not to offend him. But when I know it's just me, I type on the full-on Tactile Pro. It is the clackiest thing I have ever laid my hands upon, and it is glorious. And it's just the sound of getting things done to me. And I love it. I have to hook up laptop speakers because I can't hear music unless I have a better sound system, but, it's amazing. So, I really don't like the keys. I feel less, tired because every single key doesn't bottom out when I type on this because of the way the throw works on the keys. I find it very exciting. There was another thing I was going to actually mention about the new MacBook, and now I don't remember what it was.
Well, while you're thinking about it, we talked a little bit about the new MacBook. We didn't even mention last week Apple's second quarter results, which continue to be summarized by all the monies.
Yeah.
As we've alluded to a couple times during the show, the iPad really the only bruise on the Apple. I just came up with that. Just came up with that myself. Really the only blemish is the iPad. The iPad's continuing lack of growth. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say we don't know what the replacement cycle is for these devices. I can certainly. I mean, you look at our house. We have a lot of iPads, but we also have. Uh-huh. Including an iPad 1, which is still in regular rotation. It's not used for much other than watching the videos.
Yeah.
But that's fine because that frees up other people's devices. So we are our most recent iPad is an iPad Air, not an Air 2.
Uh-huh.
And that's one that I got through work. So I think we would also not be in a replacement cycle at this point because we had already accumulated quite a bit of iPad backlog between atypical reasons. There were gifts, there were ones that were won in a raffle, there was random crap.
Well, at my house,
yes,
we have a 2 and a 3 and an Air. And I think there was a lot of upgrade decision making, first for a camera. Mm-hmm. That I think was the first big upgrade that people wanted to do was like, well, I'd like to have one with a camera because then I can FaceTime the grandkids or whatever.
Right.
And I think the second one, as silly as it sounds, I think the second one was the fourth gen iPad, the one right before the Air, which was basically essentially the iPad 3 with a Lightning connector.
Yeah. And we've had past conversations about why it was necessary.
Yeah.
Why that came in the cycle where it did and ticked right. off people who are doing the resale arbitrage.
Yeah. Just playing Pokemon with iPads. Got to catch them all.
Well, I'm thinking in this case particularly of Christina Warren who was very upset when Apple did that. Maybe she was right. You know, maybe Apple did tick off everybody who was going to buy the next iPad, and so now they're all in a holding pattern because the upgrade cycle was interrupted.
Well,
it went the way it did.
Yeah.
But
I'm trying to remember what the iPhone cycle was in relation.
It was
It
was the 5. I mean, that was
okay,
the 5.
So the 5 was Lightning.
The
4S was 30 pin. The 5 was when they went to the Lightning connector.
And the different screen size.
Yeah, and the tall phones.
Yes.
So the reason that that's notable is I think that there were people who, like at my house, when we have to charge anything that's not the Air, it's like, let me plug in this 30-pin cable like a caveman.
Yeah, well, we have scattered. We just have a lot of them all over the place. But yeah. I think the Retina screen, the fourth gen mm-hmm. iPad, is still a great. Not, I guess not the iPad 2. It's just the iPad.
It is only just probably by the time you get to 8.3. Probably just starting to show here and there
some edges.
A little pokiness once in a while. Maybe it's a little bit slow is something.
But it's still great. And in fact, the mini is still great. And we have that's the other one. It's like such a bizarre first world problem. Among the free iPads we ended up with. The Tablet Parade. We had one original that I won at a ReadWrite Web conference.
Which you got from Marshall Kirkpatrick.
I got from Marshall Kirkpatrick. Not from Marshall. I got it from Richard McManus, technically. But
Well, the picture was Marshall handing it to you, which just made my world fold in on itself.
I guess it was.
That's why I remember it. How do you two know each other? Of course you do.
Pretty funny and bizarre situation. That was also, by the way, that was when I met Baratunde Thurston. Was that conference?
Oh, hey.
Which was a nice. It's nice to say that I had a legitimate, you know, not simply internet celebrity, but real celebrity. Then there was a vendor that gave me a mini, which now has been possessed by daughter number one. So all that to say, we are not lacking for iPads. We don't need any more iPads. Thank mm-hmm. you very much. We have enough.
The evolution also has been less dramatic over time. Like I said, there was the camera and then there was the Lightning port. And there's been, I'm not saying that there wasn't, you know, change in sometimes in a big way aside from those, but those are sort of big lines of demarcation. And you know, then there was the Air, which was 64-bit, and the Air 2 was just refinement of that. So I think that it's going to continue to refine, and I think that we only made almost all the money on iPads mm-hmm. situation. I think, and this is my own theory, that it comes from the thing that I talk about a lot, which is technological honesty. And that is, you know, do you really need as much computer as you're buying? You know, a lot of people, well, I have to have a computer. Well, what do you really do with your computer? Well, you know, I look at the book face and I have YouTube and I use Skype with the grandkids and I like to read my email and I like to play, Candy Crush casino slots. Okay. Well, guess what? You can do all that with an iPad. It will last you a lot longer. It will be more reliable for you in the long run. And you will have to call me way less often to ask me questions about what happened. And, you know, you opened that Anna Kournikova email attachment and now you don't understand why nothing's working for you anymore. So yeah, this is better for everybody if you just get one of these and stick to it. So I think there's probably a lot of people who are on those who aren't really feeling deficient in a way. And they're not getting, the iPads aren't getting the revolution every time that like they do with the phones.
With the phone. And the people who are, the people who have the new phones, I mean, and I will use the example of Mrs. Mike, just as you often use the example of Mr. Kelly when it comes to upgrade cycles. She went from the 4 to the 6 and is thrilled. I mean, legit thrilled. She loves it. And it's, I mean, it's just, it's a way, way, way better experience.
Well, it like quadrupled in size.
Well, that too. Not the 6 Plus, but the 6, but still.
That's still a lot. Cause
it's a lot of, it's a lot of screen real estate. It's a lot of performance. The camera is really so much better.
Even at my house, because Mr. Kelly went from 4S to 6 and he only went from 4S because the home button on his 4 went funny. And So I upgraded to the 5S last year or 2 years ago. I'm in line this year. I upgraded. And so I had a 4S I wasn't using.
Right.
So that's the only reason he ended up going. Otherwise he would have stuck with his 4 and gone from 4 to 6, just like Mrs. Mike did.
Yeah. And it's that's a big leap.
Oh yeah.
But the, you know, the iPad, her iPad is very, very serviceable, and it's a 3. So it's just fine. And I think that there was a comment, I can't remember where I saw it. It might've been Daring Fireball. It might've been someplace else, about the fact that maybe a lot of the product energy has been going into the watch.
Mm-hmm.
And now there might be some spare cycles to give the iPad, some pixie dust. And I think that's a reasonable thing to say.
Truly.
I'm looking forward to seeing what the next iPad will be. And, you know, maybe the Surface is going to give it a nudge. We are running short on time. There's other stuff we could have talked about, including the giant boxing, the boxing match of the century.
Oh yeah, there was boxing.
Yeah. There's basketball going on. Incredible series between the San Antonio Spurs and the Los Angeles Clippers. Just concluded the Clippers sneaking out.
What?
You were not aware of this?
No.
Yeah, the Spurs lost in 7.
No.
It happened yesterday.
No.
Gah, spoilers.
No, that's okay. I was following it. I wasn't making a point to actually watch the games or anything, but I was following it because, oddly, I was sort of rooting for the Spurs because I was pretty sure the Spurs would beat the Grizzlies because the Grizzlies beat the Blazers. And that makes me very sad.
Well, now it'll be the Clippers playing the Grizzlies. Because the Clippers in a game that was tied with 8 seconds or 9 seconds to play, Chris Paul, the Clippers guard, who was playing, he was playing the game on a bum hamstring. He tweaked his hamstring in the first quarter and left for a while and came back.
Oh wow!
And was devastating. And he hit a fadeaway jumper to take the lead for good with 1 second remaining.
The Damian Lillard. We call that here.
We call that the Lillard.
We do.
In fact,
it's a thing. They're actually like Lillard time. That's they seriously call it that. Like, oh, it's time. It's a little, you know, oh, we're down 10 and half the fourth quarter is all that's left of the game. Oh, it's Lillard time. And then bam, we come back and win. Like, it happens a lot. For people who are maybe casually acquainted with Portland, you should really watch. If you're a basketball fan, you should really watch, because practically everybody who was in a Blazers uniform until last week is up for unrestricted free agency this summer. Practically all of them. This includes Wes with his hurt foot. He blew out his Achilles in the middle of a game. It was awful. So he's up. Robin Lopez is up. You probably know his brother because he plays out that way. I'm absolutely blanking on his brother's name, his first name. But he plays for the Nets, I think.
Brooke Lopez.
Brooke Lopez. So, yeah, it's really funny to watch the two of them play each other. It makes me laugh. anyway, almost everybody on the Blazers is up this summer for unrestricted free agency. So it's going to be really interesting to see who is going to be my starting five in the fall. For people who are interested in that kind of stuff, there's an opportunity here for a huge shakeup. on the Portland team. So, and the reason that's interesting is because whatever team it is that you like, if you're a big fan of that team, there's a very good chance that somebody who was a Blazer until, like I said, who was wearing a Blazer uniform a week ago could end up where you in playing on your team, or you know, somebody that you really like on your team could end up being a Blazer. Like, it's all up in the air the way all the contracts lined up this year in Portland. So
it's all shaken out.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see. So I guess it's really hard for me to say this, but go LA.
Well, go LA, and it's going to, the playoffs continue. There were other things. There were other things we were going to talk about, but it's the clock is ticking, and the fact is that we now have more bad geek news. Oh, I hate this.
I know.
I hate this, but unfortunately, sad to report, just a few minutes ago, tweeted by the official Star Trek account that Grace Lee Whitney, the original Ensign Rand, Janice Rand, has passed away. And she will be missed. She was 1930 to 2015. So she was 85 years old. Yeah, that's correct. She died on May 1st, a couple days ago. She represented, wow, this obituary is a little, is interesting. Whitney, a blue-eyed blonde beauty, represented one of Star Trek's greatest cautionary tales and also one of the franchise's most satisfying Renaissance stories. She played the deeply professional Rand in 8 first season original series episodes before being dropped from the series and slipping into an abyss of drugs and alcohol that left her quite literally on Hollywood's skid row. She finally got help, found God, and reclaimed her life and career with an assist from Leonard Nimoy. Star Trek even came full circle for Whitney as she was invited back into the fold and appeared in the motion picture The Search for Spock, The Voyage Home, and The Undiscovered Country, as well as in the flashback episode of Voyager and the fan films World Enough in Time and Of Gods and Men. Her autobiography was published in 1998, and to her death, she remained a beloved figure at conventions around the world.
Yeah, she was one that, like, it never, once she had come back, I don't know a whole lot of Star Trek stuff, but the reason she sticks out for me is there really aren't a lot of Star Trek ladies. And also because she was always one, like, it didn't matter who else would go to the convention, but if you asked her, she would show up, and she was always happy to do it. And that was always something that sort of struck me.
Wow.
So it's sad to me that she's gone. She led a full life.
She did. I mean,
at 85, she's been around.
She's been around. But we for all the Star Trek fans out there and for the Whitney family, we send our condolences. Grace Lee Whitney, I said Ensign, I apologize. Yeoman Janice Rand. Yeoman Rand, dead at the age of 85. And on that happy note, thanks for joining us.
I'm gonna give y'all some homework. Because this is one thing that we did not talk about tonight that we had wanted to talk about because it made both Mike and I laugh. And there should be some laughter after this. So here's tonight's Unicorn Chaser. I'm sorry, it's homework. You need to go to YouTube and you need to find the C-SPAN channel. And on the C-SPAN channel, you will find the White House Correspondents' Dinner for this year. Mm-hmm. And there are 2 videos that you need to sit through. Each of them is about 20-25 minutes. They're safe for work in that there's no bad words, but they're not necessarily appropriate for work. So, you know, you may want to do this at home on your apparently aging iPad, and you need to see President Obama's remarks from White House Correspondents' Dinner 2015. And you also need to see the hostess's remarks because this year it was hosted by Cecily Strong, who you may know as, the Weekend Update guest, a girl at a party you wish you hadn't started a conversation with. And she's great at that, but that's her. So you should go watch those because they're very funny and they were really entertaining to watch. So if you get the opportunity, you should watch those and get some enjoyment back in your evening, in your day.
Highly recommended. So. We will send you some enjoyment. In the meantime, thank you all for joining us for this week's show. Next week's show, a little bit up in the air, I will be on vacation on Sunday night, which is our normal recording time, but hopefully we'll find a chance to to tape the show.
Yeah.
But thank you for coming back with us and rejoining our regular schedule. If you have suggestions, comments, concerns, recommendations, would like to be a guest, would like to sponsor the show, our hypothetical sponsors, you can find us at aftershowpodcast.com and on Twitter at @_aftershow. Kelly, where can the peoples find you?
You can find me on Twitter and app.net as Verso, and you can also find me on macobserver.com, writing the occasional explainy post, appearing on the Daily Observations podcast, and occasionally over at the British Tech Network at britishtechnetwork.com.
And you can find me extremely occasionally at the British Tech Network with the intermittent posting at my personal site, geekparent.com, but primarily on the Twitters at Mike T. Rose. Thank you all for joining us. This has been the After Show for the week of May the 4th. Be with you, 2015. Thank you very much, and good night.